Today is the 3rd of May, 2024. My name is Alice. I work in arts, and with me we have Arthur Laidlaw, who is an artist.
Also working in art.
Also working in art. We have seen 5-6 exhibitions today.
Yeah, we've seen, and actually we've got Rudy Laidlaw with us as well in the back of the car, so if there's any noises from him, he was a pretty vocal critic.
Yes.
I'd say. Critic at large.
We know his favourites.
Critic at small. okay. Oh wait, actually I should put in our destination before we go. This is gonna be excellent podcasting.
Welcome to the Art Drive.
So today we walked around galleries that are in Berlin, Potsdamer Straße. At first we went to Molitor, then Heidi, then we saw editions at Klosterfelde, then we saw Reiter, then Hua, then Max Hetzler, then Esther Schipper, and then Pop-Up at Pace, and all of that in 3 hours?
A couple of hours, yeah. I think I'm realizing the sound effects, the general sort of ambiance of the car, maybe a heavy character feature of this program.
We're taking people for a ride.
Yeah. I think that's the way to.
They are joining our journey.
That's the way to frame it. We missed a couple, but maybe we will loop back around to the Schöneberg area and try and get to a few more galleries before they close. And I guess it's a good time to start a podcast in Berlin, because it's, in theory, it's like the best shows of the year.
Yes, because Berlin Gallery Weekend happened 2 weeks ago. Spring is on and springing, so it's warm and nice for the walks. Everybody has their best shows on. And for people who are not from Berlin, you need to know that Berlin doesn't really have a center. There are many different areas, you know, as Berlin is a divided city, east-west, but also kind of south-north axis divides it. So Potsdamer Straße is super central area.
It's a strange... I remember when I first moved here and thought that it's kind of a weird... It's just a weird road to have a lot of fancy galleries on, because it's quite a...
Well, right now on the right we have a sex shop called LSD, and we are on Kurfürstenstrasse, where you have like actual working ladies on the street, and yet you also have 3 Michelin-starred restaurants in like 100-meter radius from here. Like it's a mix of it all.
It's a real mix. It's definitely... And I mean, even the building that Molitor is in is, I think, has prompted a little bit. I mean, I don't know about the actual Molitor space, because it's a kind of commercial gallery space, but I know that the apartment buildings above it caused a little bit of discomfort, and definitely the gentrification conversation was raised when that building was built. Sorry, I'm also trying not to crash the car as we do this.
So the concept of this amazing new podcast is that once a week we're gonna go see some art and then talk about what we've seen.
Yeah, I'm already diving in straight away, like head first into a thorny subject before we've even like buckled our seatbelts.
Yeah, so people don't know what we're doing. You know, it's their first 3 minutes with us.
True. So we should explain a little bit more. We're in the car. I'm driving Elise home, and we're going to see a show or maybe a couple of shows. Sometimes we'll bring my son in the car and along to the exhibitions, or anyone else who wants to come with us, and then kind of chat through the shows that we've seen and whether they were any good, I guess. It's sort of, I don't know, I think both of us have been thinking a lot about how, or the state of, I guess, art criticism, and the fact that very little seems to exist actually written. But it feels like more and more there's a lot of spoken art criticism. It's a little less, like, formal, maybe? And maybe it's not even criticism. It's more just... Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I feel like there is a lot of that in States. However, I don't think there is that much of it in Berlin at the time when I can actually go and see an exhibition. Because a lot of the printed things are either too late, or maybe not my thing, or maybe they have some, like, agenda, or, you know, you get a magazine where you have two reviews of exhibitions in Berlin, but the rest of it is from somewhere else in the world, so, like, why am I getting it? Or, like, Monopol, you know, also just, like, German-speaking other places, which are not necessarily the city. So, since we both live here, I think it kind of makes sense for us to just review things also for our non-art friends in a way where we could say, okay, if you have just an hour and you're around Potsdamer Straße, these are two or three exhibitions that you should see, because there are so many. That's another thing. Like, we spent 3 hours, we didn't see everything even in this, like, little tiny block.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, isn't it? I mean... I wasn't here for gallery weekend, and I sent some friends to some of the galleries that we went to today, and it was funny. I noticed that when I got back, they'd posted a photograph on their Instagram stories, and it was a photo of the Max Hetzler exhibition, but they had tagged Esther Schipper in the Instagram photo.
Classic,
and it kind of, yeah, and it just kind of speaks to, like, how confusing this whole thing is, which is, you know, even since we last visited, you've got a new space, you know, Pace is there for, like, I don't know, a few weeks or a couple of months, like, Gallery Uden is downstairs, you were saying, you know, it's new, or, like, has changed, there was a gallery, Galleria Plan B
was there,
and that's now in a different place. And so, like, it just, even for people who, I don't know how, you know, I don't know if I would describe myself as really on the pulse, but, like, people who are trying to see the shows as they happen, it's just like a constantly moving target, and it's really difficult to get to everything. And with the art world, you do sort of have to see it in person. So many of the shows that I feel like we saw today, you're just doing a real disservice to the work, and I don't know, they just don't translate if you don't actually go and see them in person.
So what are two or three shows from what we saw today that you think one should go and see? You know, not to overstep on anybody's feet, we're not gonna name the ones that either of us didn't like for whatever reason.
I was gonna
go,
that was my first question. I was gonna be like, so at least let's rank them from worst to best. But maybe you're right,
do the highlights for now.
Yeah. To me, we started at Gallery Molitor, and I feel like not that I was biased exactly, but I knew going into it, Lisa Joe is the artist, and I knew that I would, even if I didn't like the show for whatever reason, maybe if I hadn't, I wasn't into the curation, that I would like the paintings. And actually, as it happens, I loved the curation. I thought it was a really excellent use of a very difficult space. It's a super challenging, like, very brutal, concrete, you know, lots of different heights and lots of different lighting situations.
It's also three floors. That complicated.
It's very complicated, and it just seems like a very elegant, like, sort of weightless solution. We should say that the paintings, they they have been installed using these sort of... Some of them are on the walls, as you'd expect, but others have got these sort of steel bars that are running from the ceiling to the ground.
And it almost looks like they're stretched, you know, as if those bars are somehow stretching the works.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, as far as I could understand, there's actually a kind of hook that is, or a kind of ring that seems to be screwed into the ceiling, which is no small undertaking in itself, because you're drilling into concrete, and then you're kind of fixing this steel rod. And the steel rod seems to be measured so exactly that it actually hangs from the hook in the ceiling. So you have this kind of like weighty but quite thin steel rod just hanging from the ceiling. You've got two of those, and they have little feet at the bottom to kind of keep them in place. And they're not, I don't think they're raw exposed steel. So you don't have that, like...
I think they were black, no?
Yeah, I think they were black. So you don't have that kind of Richard Serra. Nothing's really interrupting the aesthetic of the paintings themselves. But then the paintings are hung on the two bars, in a way. And it creates this sort of effect, like they're sort of dominoes in the space, or they're like these sort of hanging... It's hard to say, and I mean, it's interesting because I brought up Stephanie Heinze's work, who's a Berlin artist who's moved to New York, and I have a feeling that Lisa Jo, I don't know if she's originally based in New York, but she now works in Berlin, and they have a very similar working practice. And I think, I mean, there are of course differences in the paintings, but there is to me a striking compositional similarity between the two artists. And I just realized that at Capitan Petzl, where I've seen Stephanie Heinze's work, she also uses this sort of free-floating painting in the gallery space curating technique. And I don't know what it is. I mean, you were describing there's a kind of digital quality to the paintings.
Well, first of all, I agree with you that was one of the best shows that we saw today. For me, I think it's number two. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the paintings themselves, they have this very muted and complex color palette. They are abstractions, but not fully abstract. Like, there are still things that I could notice in them. There were like feet, and I think when we spoke with
Camila,
the curator and the gallerist, she said something about how Lisa Jo uses cutouts from erotic magazines, I think, as the initial, some kind of shapes that are then later used. Mm-hmm. So I could kind of see that, but then
there is a collage element.
There is a collage element, but then also sometimes the way it's painted, it's very flat in certain areas, not all of it. It's very layered as the work itself. But some moments in the work would remind me of the very online Pantone kind of realm, where it's just a block of color. And quite a few of the things that we saw today in different galleries had that aspect. So I wonder if it's generally just the online world kind of taking over, the graphic design world maybe, taking over our expectation of what color is and what it does.
Yeah, I was trying to frame, I wanted to start a piece of writing about this, and about this, I don't know, something, it was sort of infused with, next one? No, not this one, next one.
Next one, yeah.
We can go a couple of times around the block or just sit idling while we thrash it out. But I had this idea about just a piece of writing about the, you know, I noticed the Whitney Biennial, now I've missed it. It was down there, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's okay. We could go through here and just, like, chill in the car.
Okay.
I live too close to these galleries. 10 minutes.
Yeah, you do. You need to live right on the outskirts somewhere. But yeah, I had this idea, I'll go somewhere else, that basically, I noticed the title for the Whitney Biennial was even better than the real thing, was that it? And it's a U2 title. And there was a lot of discussion about AI in relation to the state of the art world at the moment. And I kind of was thinking about how it's actually quite, I don't know, I remember, now I'm remembering that we're going to try and do this unedited, so I'm trying to filter my thoughts into a coherent passage.
We're not cutting anything.
But, okay, so I remember it was Dean Kissick, actually, who is an art critic, describing that he went to the Biennial. I'm going to turn the car back on so we get a bit of air conditioning. He went to the Biennial and he was disappointed to see that so few of the paintings, or so few of the artworks, engaged with the subject presented by the curators of AI and digital work and this sort of like current crisis of creativity, or is it a crisis of creativity, etc. And he was saying that there were only a couple of artists that actually used digital processes in the making of their artwork, and I think he described Holly Herndon and a couple of others. But I think that the premise that in order to deal with digital topics or AI and like our current moment of sort of our chronic onlineness, but also our chronic digitalness and our chronic like the sense of stress that artificial intelligence is like going to sort of just subsume and suppress any creativity that we have. The idea that that has to actually be, that we have to engage with those subjects using digital art works is a fallacy. Like, I think that actually, to me, there is a way that you can actually describe and even interrogate and discuss the visual world that we live in through an old medium like painting. I think that is something that's sort of underexplored, because we so understand the language of paint. It's so kind of taught, I guess, so learned, as like so culturally learned, that I think what I felt as we went around the shows all together, but particularly in the Molly Tour show, is that actually painting allows you a kind of, it's not neutrality, it's not like painting is neutral. It has its own, you know, it has its own prejudices. But it feels like it allows you to explore some of the kind of visual, I don't know, the visual noise of our age, I guess, in a way that if you were to try and do it with a new medium, or even a medium as new as like video art or sound art or something more avant-garde than that, then like there's so much moving, there's so much at play, and there's so much to try to pin down as a viewer, that it's a very fraught and complicated experience that can result in something quite unsatisfying.
For me, it's also the fact that I think art is one of those rare places where the human hand is really necessary, and it's one of the only places where the humanness of the creator is present fully. And especially if we, you know, in the 20th century have looked at quite a lot of art which is conceptual, where the idea is by the artist and it's executed by other people, or it's executed technologically, but it's still by the artist because it's his idea. And then if we give the idea, or her, or her, or theirs.
Well, that, yeah, yeah.
But if we give the gift of idea making away to AI as well.
Yes, sure.
Then in the end, you know, what's left for us? So I'm not saying that that's where the art is going for. And I think from the shows that we're seeing these days, also it seems like nobody really knows how to monetize it, if it would be. Because then that would just completely devalue everything. And when I say monetize, I don't mean just like money-wise. I meant more like create value.
Yeah.
Also culturally.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to put it, actually. That the more that AI, or like some kind of unknown element of AI is involved, I think the more that people are afraid of its, you know, that somehow undercuts its value. I mean, I'm interested a little bit, I mean, it's a bigger discussion and we should get back to some of the other shows that we saw, but I'm interested in, you know, I thought a lot about actually how Tom Holmes's paintings, that they are using AI in the source imagery, and that is really...
It's his way of creating an abstraction, because it's not really something that exists.
Yeah, and anyway.
But for me, I think, you know, exactly this is the reason why... Are we blocking there, driving? Yeah. I think for me, this was exactly the reason why I really, really liked Anne-Veronica Janssen's exhibition at Esther Schipper.
Mm.
Because...
So I was going to ask you, what was your favorite show?
So it was my favorite show, but I am biased because Anne-Veronica Janssen is one of my favorite artists generally, and I did work at Esther Schipper some long time ago at this point. And I didn't know what exactly I'm going to see there.
Mm.
What we saw were objects. Some of them were swings on which the visitors were invited to sit down and just swing in the space, and then the base of it would change the color. So it was about the interaction with the human body and how it changes and how color is created. And then other works were in this glass, which is not really glass, but also a mirror with a lot of colorful elements in it, and some of it is kind of like shattered glass. And then when you move in the space, you see how the color changes. It's all about your movement in space, not just your perspective of what you're seeing. And to me, it's just a very human experience, even though the object itself is not created, you know. Hi, Rudy. is not created with paintbrush, but...
I think it was Rudy's favorite show.
I think it might have been.
I'm gonna...
Shall we take him to...
I'm gonna grab him.
So Rudy is moving from the back seat to the front.
Let's see how this goes on the podcast.
It's gonna be fine. So Rudy has been taken into hands. So I can see Arthur also having some milk. So Rudy will be fed.
So I
think it was just a very different experience, and I don't think there is any other artist like Anne-Veronica Janssen that does what she does.
I think there was something very, I don't know, there's something about that, the fragility of the works, and then that, like, the it's just an insane action to swing in a gallery space. Like, it's just a really, like, both freeing, but also it's like a bit hold your heart and your mouth,
especially swinging in a room full of glass.
That's what it's, and like, you got this,
and it's this trust
you're looking
that you
have. at these beautiful but like shattered things. And usually, obviously, you're thinking about the way in a gallery that you might, you know, that you might break something, but you're actually looking at things that are already broken, you know, but might break further.
Yeah.
And it definitely has a, Yeah, to me it was also probably my favorite show. Rudy kind of was captivated by it, but I think it's just the... Yeah, what do you think?
And I think it brings out this like very universally human experience of what color is, what light is, how it feels, how do we feel around things that are fragile, how do we feel about around things which are darker or lighter. It's, you know, it all sounds very basic, but at the same time, it is so fundamental.
I was about to say, in another gallery and in another artist's hands, it easily either topples into kitsch or into sort of just banal or basic, or and it just doesn't. It just feels sublime and in a way that's kind of like... Okay, Rudes. Yeah, like it's, you sort of, you hope for these small, it very rarely happens that you have a fully transcendental like experience in a gallery, but you hope for these like lifts out of yourself and out into something that is, yeah, just, you know, it's kind of why you do this over and over and over again. You go to as many shows as you do because you hope that you might just get something that makes you look a little bit differently at the world when you leave. And it definitely felt like that. It felt like such simple objects and also arranged in a very simple way, but that's also a kind of illusion, like a lot of the really great shows and really great work, it's often an illusion. Like the simplicity, it's an illusion. It's much more, it takes so much work to get to that point.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, for another artist, having such ephemeral works might be like a work where they don't have much of an object, whereas for Ann-Veronica Janssens, who sometimes works with purely just light and mist, and it is as much of an object as she can create, you know, as much as she can capture light is in this glass. I don't know if you remember, I think it was like 2015-16 in London, there was this exhibition by her where you would enter the space and it was all just a colorful fog.
I did see that. I didn't go to the show, but I did see it when it was on. I do remember it.
And I think everyone's Instagram who was in London at the time was just exploding with it.
Yeah, I remember because it's not that... It wasn't that far away.
It was somewhere by Regent's Park, I think, no?
Yeah, but I'm just remembering at the time Anthony Gormley also had a fog-based cube at the Hayward Gallery, I think. And then recently I was at a fog show at Haus der Kunst. Is that in Munich? By a different artist again. And it's funny these ways that, you know, people have tried.
The hers is so different because it's not so much fog. I think it's more like a color experience.
Yes.
You're just experiencing.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Enough food, we want attention.
Yeah. Wants to drive the car now.
Boys and their toys.
Yeah. Cars. Yeah, I think that's a good way of thinking about it because there are so many different ways that people have tried to use the space and the gallery as a medium into an... Okay, I have a feeling we might be
wrapping up. Okay.
Next time we need a longer drive.
We need a longer drive and less of galleries.
A fewer galleries. I mean, what do you think, Roots?
Well, let's see. So we have actually spoken for half an hour.
Okay, so that'll...
It is an episode.
That'll do it. Well, if you did join us for this chaotic, hopefully somewhat cathartic drive from a very short distance from Schöneberg to kind of North Mitte, basically,
yeah,
sort of
No man's land also.
No man's land, Wedding, Moabi area. Then thank you very much. And we will be doing this again.
Next
incredibly
Friday.
Professionally next week.
We will get better at this. If you have any comments, wishes, suggestions, we are open to those.
Maybe you want to hear more of Rudy. Maybe you want to hear less of us.
That can be arranged.
That's certainly possible. We can have a little spin-off Rudy cast for
We can teach him to talk quickly in a week's time.
I mean, he's definitely... I can say that the Pace show, he really liked the kind of, the Philip Guston-esque kind of... What was that painting at the beginning?
He did like the ones that they had in the showroom itself, no?
That's what I mean, sofas. Loved those ones in there. And then kind of maybe a little bit like his dad, not that interested in the rest.
But that's okay. Maybe that's we were just tired.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye.
Bye.